Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
This is Seth Gilliam.
Hey, this is Holland Roden.
My name is Kiahu Kuhuanui.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Ponzio.
I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hey, it's Ronnie Adams.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh!
Ha-ha! This is Jeff Davis, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
To Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. This is our 80th episode, a nice round number to finish off season 4. Season 4, episode 12, Smoke and Mirrors, the finale, aired on Monday night. And yeah, that's it. We're done for the season. How does that feel, Karen?
I don't know. I'm really torn because we always look forward to hiatus because things are a little less crazy, but Teen Wolf, I don't want it to be over yet.
It feels weirdly fast. Like, it feels like you know, it was too much too quickly, and, like, I don't know, just, that, you know, obviously it's only a short season this year, but it all just feels very strange, really.
Yeah, I keep saying that it feels like it just started, even though it was obviously several months ago, so
yeah,
I don't know.
So I guess three months, but for a show to only air, you know, 3 months out of the year, I think because we had such a short gap between, I guess, season 3B and 4, well, kind of, we had, like, yeah, I guess only, like, it ended in, like, April or May, and then it was June, you know, coming back or
yeah,
whatever, so it was quite, you know, the turnaround was pretty fast. So we have had a lot of Teen Wolf this year, and then we're not going to have any for pretty much a whole other year. So the you know, the flow of the timing, obviously, because it's not a network like show, it's not like a full public channel show, like, you know, that just has a set season that airs, you know, from September onwards, and, you know, for, you know, half a year basically. Yeah, it just feels very strange, you know, to just have these little quick bursts of Teen Wolf and then, you know, bye-bye for 11 months or 8 months or however long it's going to be. Oh, well, I'm sure we'll find something to do, you know.
Yeah, I think we could put a couple things together.
Yeah, perhaps we could start covering another show in the break instead. just joking. Yeah, let's do a podcast about Agent Carter. But anyway,
okay.
You're like, yeah, okay, don't, because this is how this show started, Karen.
I know.
We just threatened, we threatened, and then, yeah, accidents happen. 80 episodes later, here we are, so, yeah. We're not allowed to start any podcasts as a joke anymore, because what happens is it consumes your life, basically.
We get a little carried away.
Yeah. All right, so we're not going to do that, but we are going to carry on with the recap of this episode and hopefully give you some nice Teen Wolf content over the break of many, many months so that you don't forget about us and that you don't forget about the show and, you know, you keep entertained until then. If you want to get in touch with us, you know, after this episode with your thoughts on the finale or basically any time in the next foreseeable future that you have some thoughts about Teen Wolf, you can reach us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. You can reach us on our email, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also comment on any of the Hyperbole articles that come up about Teen Wolf, we'll see that. At least one of us will see that. Or the actual podcast episode page on Hyperbole as well. So, yeah, lots of ways you can get in touch. If you're feeling lost and alone in the void, you know, now that season 4 is over and we don't know, you know, what's coming next, basically. That was very morose and, you know, sounds like a, you know, a self-help line or something like that. So, you know, a support network. But we try.
I mean, that's not inaccurate.
I suppose. Yeah. And I guess, you know, next season will be the senior year of our little pack, or most of them. And then they won't be Teen Wolves anymore. They'll be College Wolves.
I don't know if I'm excited or kind of terrified.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, they've done a pretty good job of dragging it out so far with like a couple of seasons per school year. You know, but we did get there. Like, we did get to junior, you know, junior year with all the way through, and now they're going to be seniors. So, yeah, off we go, you know, into the world. We're being very depressing. We're being very like, God, it's all ending. I don't think it's all ending. I think we're okay. But, yeah, it's just big things are ahead, I suppose. I guess we should get into the actual finale and recapping that and hearing about, you know, our thoughts on, yeah, what happened for the end of season 4 in Smoke and Mirrors. So, I mean, did you want to go ahead with the quotes first as usual, Karen?
Yeah, sure. And I feel the need to warn people that I'm kind of deliriously tired at this point because I was up until like 2 a.m. I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
I watched the encore episode of Teen Wolf at midnight, which was, I mean, it probably wasn't that smart, but I don't care.
I did worry a bit about that because I asked if we could record at this time, which is very late night at me, but sort of morning for Karen, like getting up time in the morning.
Morning. It's 8 a.m.
Well, it's not like 6 a.m. It's like I get up before 8 a.m. every day anyway. So, you know, recording at 8 a.m. for me isn't that difficult. Karen is a little bit more resentful of the morning. But that's fine. But yeah, I just, we're recording at this time, so neither of us had to skip work this week, basically, because that does sometimes happen. Good thing it's a bit flexible. But yeah, she's a little bit tired from getting up. And you know, she was messaging me on Viber, and I'm like, isn't it like 1 a.m? I was like, are you going to be okay to record at 8? And she's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, wait, isn't it like 1 a.m. now? And she's like, yeah, I'm watching the episode again. And I was like, okay, all right. I'd be dead at 1 a.m, but oh well.
Well, that's when I peak, so that's why mornings are so hard.
Yeah, like,
but anyway,
do you peak in like a, you could go out partying or like driving around for ice cream or something, or do you peak in a like, I'm trapped in a web of internet and I will never stop looking at the internet kind of way?
Both.
I want to go partying with you and get ice cream at 1 a.m. When are we gonna do that?
When I come to Australia.
Oh god. It's nothing to do at 1 a.m. in Australia, Karen.
Anyway, so yes, I just want to warn people that this episode will probably either be a disaster or hilariously funny.
I think it's going to be good. Okay. I'm feeling good about it.
I'm glad you are. All right, so my quote comes from Leah, and it's when she says, Scott says we don't kill people. And I really love Malia. It's so funny because at the end of season 3, we're like, yeah, we don't trust her. And I don't know what they're going to do with her character. And she's probably evil because she's Peter's daughter. And she turned out brilliant. I love her. I love every scene she's in. And I love how she's sort of, I mean, she's very attached to Stiles, obviously, but she's also very attached to Scott. And she really trusts Scott to lead her, and I think that's huge for somebody like Malia, who had been on her own for so long.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about Malia as well. I think that, like, there's quite a few unanswered questions with her, like, you know, if she still has that aim to, you know, turn back to a coyote, like why she originally came to Scott, or, you know, anything like that. If she seems quite happy being a human, not wanting to run off into the woods or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of season three, the kind of press and the and stuff surrounding her, the way that people were talking about her, was really, you know, it did make her sound like she was going to be kind of sneaky and, you know, manipulative and bad motives and stuff like that. Like, it's something about the way they talked about her and the press gave that impression, but that hasn't really turned out to be what's happened with her at all. So yeah, I didn't expect to like her that much. I expected her to be kind of shady, but I'm quite pleased with the way that they've ended up taking it, you know, given her relationship with Peter and everything like that. I mean, is she's one of the people, I guess she's a, I mean, she's in the opening credits now, so she's a, you know, does she count as a full regular for season four?
Yeah, I would assume so.
And then I guess she'll stay that for season five as well?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that should be fun. I mean, people seem to really like her, and the writers, you know, seem to really like her, and you know, she's very, you know, very funny and also, you know, got some good plots. We didn't really ever, you know, just getting into it quickly, I'm not sure that we ever really got the answer about her killing Kate Argent or anything like that. Like, that wasn't really addressed. And, you know, given that they're both still around, you know, I'm not sure where that all progressed to. But, you know, it seems like, you know, her mystery is going to be tied into next season. It's Brayden's mystery and it's her mystery, and all of these people have got this mystery of the Desert Wolf. So, yeah, look forward to that. My quote was actually an exchange between Stiles and Derek, which, you know, have been few and far between this season, I guess. And, I mean, you know, people listening to this show know that I'm not, you know, I'm not a hardcore Derek shipper or anything like that. You know, we don't object to people at R. You know, and I definitely, I guess, have, you know, enjoyed that pairing just because a lot of, you know, people write some very good quality, you know, fan fiction for that pairing. But, you know, their interactions on screen have been pretty limited lately, but they did spend, you know, a large car journey riding to Mexico this week, which is fun. And, you know, something I really like about this show, I mean, you know, this relationship, but the show in general, it always, you know, gives you a good impression of what these people's relationships are off screen, even when you don't constantly see them interact. Like, it doesn't seem like, you know, the conversations that they have on screen are the only conversations they ever have, if you know what I mean. Like, you can tell how a relationship has grown, you know, even when you're not necessarily looking at it. And, you know, the scene between, you know, Stiles and Derek in the back of the police transport, you know, looking after Liam, I think really, they're really, you know, really, really comfortable and funny together. But basically when Liam was freaking out, you know, transforming, and Derek was trying to, you know, help him meditate or whatever, Stiles yells, "I don't think Alpha, Beta, Omega is resonating with him." And Derek said, "Well, do you know any other mantras?" And it was just, it was ridiculous, heightened, slightly slapsticky comedy in the middle of, you know, stress. And I just found it, you know, objectively delightful and funny. But also I really enjoyed kind of seeing, you know, how that relationship has sort of continued, even if it hasn't been a focus on screen. You can kind of tell what they're like with each other. And I think that's a really good example. I still really enjoy it.
Yeah, me too. I think, you know, Sterica aside, like, it was such a relief, I guess, to finally see these two together on screen, because like you said, all season they haven't really had a lot of interactions, and I feel like, you know, they should, because they're all part of the same group, and to have them finally working together, you can see how well they work together. I mean, not only the characters, but the actors as well. I mean, they have great chemistry, just as sort of buddies and kind of like bantering and stuff like that, and they always have. But even aside from that, I love that, you know, in season one, Stiles was always like, yeah, Derek's the bad guy, and, you know, it's probably Derek, he's probably killing all these people, and blah, blah, and he never trusted him. And finally now in season four, they're side by side, they're working together, and that scene where Stiles keeps looking back at Derek, and Derek's like, go, just save Scott, like, you know, both of them have just grown so much since season one. And I think in those, you know, no dialogue at all, just them looking at each other just says so much about the characters.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. I mean, that scene where he looks back kind of when Derek is, like, you know, dying on the ground or whatever, you know, I'm like, oh, that, you know, that lit a few fires, I'm sure. But, like, I think what it is, you know, I think what it is that, you know, people find, you know, frustrating and delightful and stuff like that about a ship like this or just two characters like this is that you have, it's always, like, really frustrating or really, like, oh, can you just, you know, you want to see them together, you know, in whatever way, is when it's two people, I think what it narrows down to, I mean, you know, people will probably argue or, you know, say it's more complex than that, but when it's two people who are on the same side, they're both in the same team, but they are kind of bickering or don't get along or, you know, that they kind of clash even though they're on the same side. People who are on the same side yet clash and then eventually figure out how to work together and appreciate each other, that's, like, a surefire hit for, like, really good chemistry and like, a relationship or friendship that's going to be interesting to people. And I really like that. And I think I just, like, you know, to put my finger on it, I really think that scene in the van, you know, we know that they are, you know, both, you know, kind of equals and worthy of, you know, they both respect each other and all of that kind of thing. But they literally, I don't know if it's just because Derek was, like, more chill and human and, you know, that they were both on the same playing field, but that was really the first time that I kind of looked at them as equals, if you know what I mean. Like, that they really just seemed, like, it didn't even seem like they would, you know, not that age is, like, you know, age on Teen Wolf is whatever, but, like, that they seem like two people really on the same level, you know, working, obviously, on the same thing. And they've worked on the same thing many times, but it was like, it always was like, you know, annoying kid with kind of older grumpy dude who's like, oh, this kid can't help me kind of thing. And we know that that isn't necessarily how Derek has thought through season, you know, 3B and stuff like that, but we just haven't seen it. Don't know, something about the way that they were kind of approaching that situation in the van, like it showed them as equals next to each other, which I kind of really liked as well. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that shall be, I guess, our steric chat for the rest of the episode. I mean, there's lots to get through, but yeah, there were some cool moments with that relationship. So yeah, don't worry, steric people. We have not forgotten about you. Sometimes people think that we are like, you know, steric causes a lot of drama, which we understand, but you know, it doesn't really stop the on-screen stuff from being pretty cool. And, yeah, it was nice to see them still throw that in.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's jump into the discussion because there was a lot of really awesome things that happened in this episode. The first of which, we kind of get a little bit more of a backstory on Kate. She said she was drawn to the temple, the name of which means smoke and mirrors. So that kind of explains the title of the episode. And she said that the berserkers helped her to survive, and she realized that she could control and create them. And, I mean, later we learn that Peter was the one who helped her come to that conclusion. But my question here is, she was controlling the berserkers before she actually, like, sat down and talked with Peter and started working with him, right? Or is the implication here that they had been working long before that?
I don't know, honestly. I guess I should sort of say right off the bat, like, I like the result of this episode, but the execution of it had a few too many unanswered questions for me, or things that were just like, oh yeah, we've got a solution, but we haven't explained how we got here, if you know what I mean. And I don't know if that's like mysteries yet to come, or if it was just like they didn't have time to fit it in and it was like, you know, you just had to accept it. But there were quite a few things that I'm not really sure about in this episode. So just this is one of them, I suppose. I don't know, you know, how long she's been doing that. So, you know, we're presuming, you know, she had the berserkers in 401, you know, when she had Derek come to her, or, you know, when she took Derek and, you know, put him in the you know, coffin to make him a baby or whatever it was that happened. But, you know, when she kidnapped him, you know, was Peter with him at that time? Where was Peter? Are we meant to think that Peter orchestrated that? Like, you know, I don't really understand what happened there at all, honestly. So I don't know when Peter came into the picture in terms of the berserkers. Maybe she had the control and then when she met him, she'd learned she could create them. Like, maybe it was like a two-way, you know, a two-step process or something, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was under the assumption that Peter kind of came in later, and even if she didn't know how to create them until she talked with him, she did know that she can control them, obviously, because she said when she showed up to the temple, they were there to sort of, like, help her and everything, but...
Yeah,
I think maybe I do want to go back and, like, rewatch the season kind of as a whole and see where that fits in. But I'm pretty sure Peter didn't show up until didn't show up to, like, help her until much later.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And I mean, we don't really have an answer as to why she could control the berserkers.
Yeah, that was another sort of thing with this, because she said she was drawn to the temple, and I think that's really interesting given what she ended up turning into. I think that makes sense, but there's a whole lot more mythology here that I would love to see them explore. I don't know if they're going to have time to do it in season 5, if they plan on having Kate's story extend into that with the fact that Chris is going after her, like if we'll still see snippets of them, but I really still want to learn more about the mythology of like the Werejaguars and these temples and what she can do, because so far the things that she can do are really different from the things that werewolves can do.
Yeah. I mean, when was the first time that we heard her called La Loba? Like, is that what they were calling her way back when the Calaveras or, you know, whoever it was had Derek and Peter strapped to the wall? They were being like, where is La Loba? So that would be, you know, an implication that she's been playing with those bone people for quite a while.
Right.
If they were already calling her that, I don't know why they didn't, like, fill in everyone, like, why the Calaveras weren't like, yeah, we call her that because she has these giant bone men that she controls and that follow her around, like, heads up, if you know what I mean. But...
Well, the Calaveras aren't really that helpful, are they?
No, I suppose not. But I don't know. You know, I don't know how Peter is meant to, you know, how long that's meant to be going. Maybe they, like, texted or something. I don't know. Like, it's like, it does seem a bit, you know, odd in terms of Peter being the one to teach her about berserkers or something like that. Because, yeah, I don't know about the timing. But, oh well.
Yeah, I'm hoping we'll see more of her in season 5. But regardless of that, you know, she can control the berserkers. She, at the end of the last episode, she turned Scott into a berserker and she was controlling him and gets him to stab Kira, which I was really surprised by this scene because it was pretty gruesome and kind of traumatic.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, Kira, like, the episode, like, was very, like, physically, like, dark and, it, like, yeah, pretty rough. It was all a bit gory and everyone looked kind of, you know, nasty and, like they usually make people look, you know, pretty nice and attractive even when they're, like, you know, dying and bleeding all over the place. But Kira really looked like she'd been totally trashed. And then, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that Scott did this episode that was obviously forgivable, but, you know, it's gonna be, you know, a bit rough for people, you know, like, especially I think Kira and Liam kind of about Scott, you know, or the berserker Scott stabbing and hurting and all of that nonsense. I kind of liked the scene in terms of, you know, Kate being like, oh, we have to test his loyalty and stuff like that. It was kind of freaky, and I kept expecting it any second for him to be like, turn around and be like, haha, I was just going along with it and now I take you down. But no, it was really, you know, really affected, and we don't really know the, you know, the magic process that makes it not just, you know, a bone helmet and it actually, you know, infects you. So, yeah, but it definitely happened.
Yeah, and I'm glad they decided to go with, I mean, we'll talk about it later, but the whole route with how he ends up breaking out of it and everything, it was perfect. And I'm glad it wasn't just, I can't stab Kira, I'm going to break free of this, you know, bone helmet now. And yeah, just the way they ended up doing it was really good. But aside from that, we jump back to Beacon Hills, and Sheriff Stilinski doesn't want Stiles to go to Mexico, which is totally understandable. He wants to go, like, the lawful route, get everybody involved. But my question is, would that really work? I mean, they're fighting a werejaguar and a bunch of berserkers. Does he really think going to the police and dragging them to Mexico and fighting these things is a good idea?
No. Honestly, I don't think that he thinks that, you know, he's going to be that much more effective. Though, you know, he may really just believe in, you know, his job and believe in the real process. But I think it's more just that he's like, yeah, don't care how screwed up the world is, don't want my kid doing this, and if I can control that, I will. But, I mean, it was a really, yeah, really great scene in terms of the sheriff and Stiles, and you know, their kind of idea of compromise, basically.
Which didn't work out, thanks, no, Stiles.
And like, he's still, like, to this day, like, Stiles is, he's a, you know, he's a manipulator and a liar, like, you know, no matter, it's not just like, you know, he was just like, okay, Dad, that's fine, that's right, I'll go along with that. And as soon as he walks out of there, it's like, nope. And I mean, I get it. And I don't think Stiles is a bad person, but, you know, if he wasn't on the side of good, you know, his morals are not, you know, his morals are not the strongest, and his, you know, you can't really take him at his word. So, like, you know, it's kind of lucky he's on our side, I guess.
Exactly. That's how I think about him too, because yeah, if he was on the flip side, he would make a really, I think, tricky enemy to kind of defeat. But yeah, because he is good, you know, he might walk that line sometimes, but I think his loyalty above anything else is always going to be there. And yeah, that's why I really loved the scene, despite the fact that he did sort of, you know, turn on his dad and go to Mexico anyway. But he is willing to do anything to save Scott. And I think Kira, too. You know, Kira's a good friend to him, but Scott is obviously the primary objective. And he basically told his dad, yeah, I will find a way to get down there. And his dad's like, I'll lock you up. He's like, I'll still find a way. And you know he will. Nothing yeah would stop Stiles.
Oh, it must be so frustrating to parent him, or to attempt to parent him, if you know what I mean. Like,
attempt to parent,
like,
him.
Like, it's just, oh, you know, oh, it's awful. And I don't know, it's, I mean, I understand, like, the stakes, you know, and obviously, you know, the sheriff does at the end of the day kind of understand the stakes as well. But it's still, you know, and you still kind of want to be like, no, I have to, you know, protect him in whatever way I can. But God, it's, yeah, he's awful sometimes, Stiles. Like, you know, it's for the greater good, but he's freaking terrible. So yeah, it must be, I do feel for the sheriff, you know, quite often.
Oh yeah, I mean, can you imagine, this is his only child, he's lost his wife, and Stiles is basically uncontrollable. I mean, not in a bad way, but Stiles is definitely gonna do what he feels he needs to do, and that must just, I mean, give the sheriff panic attacks sometimes. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, they really do have an amazing relationship.
Yeah, no, definitely. But yeah, there is still an element of kind of the parent-child control that is being ignored by one side, and I don't know whether it's that Stiles needs to dial it back a bit. I mean, he is sort of too involved to dial it back. And I mean, he did try to say to him, he was like, yeah, Dad, like, you can't stop me. It just sucks a bit that he kind of agreed to the only thing I have a kind of intrinsic problem with in terms of, you know, lying and stuff like that, is that he kind of agreed to the negotiation and then still went anyway, as opposed to being straight up like, Dad, I'm not going to do what you're saying, I'm going to go, if you know what I mean, as opposed to, like, easing the way by lying. But, you know, it's, I get it, but it's, you know, it's always going to be like that. And even though Sheriff is in the know, it's still always going to be like that, it seems.
Yeah, definitely. Well, jumping over to Derek, I don't want to talk about him too much because I have a lot to say about him later on. But Derek doesn't think he's going to come back from this mission, and he's okay with that. And that was kind of a really sad scene to see, but the highlight here for me was Brayden, because Brayden was not okay with that. And, you know, obviously we talked to Megan Tandy at the beginning of the season, and she was like, yeah, you might see her change, and we didn't really know to what extent that would be. And she changed a lot from the premiere episode of season 4, and she is really on board with Derek and the rest of the pack. She was willing to risk her life to go save Scott and Kira, not just to, like, track down Kate, because I don't think at this point she really cared about Kate all that much.
I don't think they're still paying her or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it was to go help Scott and Kira, and it was just like, ugh. I really love how much she's transformed since the first episode of this season.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely, you know, unearthed some feelings there. And we haven't seen a great deal of, like, the whys of her and Derek's relationship, if you know what I mean. It just sort of seems to have come from chemistry and, like, living in close quarters. But they did get close, you know, fairly quickly. And, yeah, I mean, I really like, you know, I love the whole Derek learning from her and what he's, you know, how he hasn't fought back against sort of being a human. I mean, he's, you know, probably annoyed as hell by it. You know, we say, he, you know, see here that he's frustrated, but he's never like, ugh, you puny humans. Like, ugh, I'm so much better than you. I'll be so much better than you again when I get my powers back, if you know what I mean. There's none of that kind of attitude, which... you know, a couple of seasons ago, you might have sort of expected from Derek. So yeah. I really like their dynamic. Like, and, you know, he's so willing to kind of, you know, let her lead and teach him. But, yeah, I mean, it seems one of those cases, like, you know, forced, you know, close proximity, high-stakes circumstance, you know, feelings happen. And it's nice and it's relatively healthy, like, you know, for him, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, way, definitely a step up from the last girlfriend, so yeah. I'm okay with it.
And I feel like, you know, they're pretty on a level with each other in terms of, you know, much like what I was saying about Scott and Kira the other week, you know, they fight together, they, you know, they can talk business. It's not like, you know, she's not like a, you know, a damsel like Jennifer or like a kind of, you know, seductress like Kate, I guess. She's just practical and, you know, upfront, and it seems to work really well for Derek. I think Derek, you know, doesn't particularly want to be the big strong man in control like, you know, he was with, you know, Jennifer, well, at least in her identity of being Jennifer before she was revealed as the Dirac. And I think that he kind of likes, you know, not, I guess, not having to be that, or just being a bit more practical and, you know, things. Their relationship seems to lack drama in a good way, I guess.
Yeah, I think part of that is just because Brayden is so upfront and honest, and she's not afraid to tell you exactly what she's thinking, and she's like, you know, in the... where other people would be like, yeah, I'm doing this, you know, because... I need the money and I need a future. And she's just like, no, I gotta eat. I'll do anything. And I think that kind of honesty for Derek is something that he hasn't had. And
yeah, it's like, oh, she's really... probably not lying to me.
Yes,
probably not
exactly.
Hiding a secret evil identity.
Exactly. And yeah, he really needs that. And I think they work really well together.
Yeah. And she didn't die. And he didn't die. And no one died.
Woo!
I was slightly worried that they would, like, you know, kill her to, you know, further his drama, if you know what I mean. Like, that, you know, we'd think, oh, Derek's going to die, and then it was actually, oh, Brayden's going to die, you know, in terms of the Lydia scream thing. But so
yeah.
I'm glad that that did not happen.
For the record, we were texting last night, and Natalie was like, were there any major deaths? And I was like, that's a really good question. And then she called me a terrible friend, and I said, no, I'm a good friend, and you're going to thank me later, so...
Why would I thank you? I still don't understand what I meant to thank you for.
Because I didn't ruin anything, and you saw the episode without any taint.
I did see it without any spoilers, but that doesn't mean I didn't want to know if there were any major deaths, Karen. Just, anyway, moving on, no major deaths, just lots of red shirt Calaveras. That's nice.
Yeah, that's true. Liam, this episode, was kind of amazing, and we'll get into, like, his big scene later, but in the beginning here, he wants to go help save Scott, even though he's terrified, even though he wasn't sure just an episode or two ago that he really wanted to get wrapped up in all of this, and he did. He went after his alpha, and that was just a really awesome moment to see, I think.
I really like the bit where, like, Peter was talking to Derek about, like, how, you know, they were going to need stuff. And he was like, we're going to need more people. We're going to need Malia. Maybe Liam. Definitely me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just loved. Oh, Peter. Oh, Peter. You.
Yeah, let's talk about Peter for a minute because.
What, right now? Okay.
Well, I mean, it goes hand in hand because that scene kind of confused me. I'm like, all right, I understand why he would want Malia. And I'm like, but he wants Liam. That's kind of weird. He didn't mention Lydia. I realize that she can't fight, but she's got this power that is very, very useful. And I don't know, like, where he was coming from with that. But on the flip side, why? I mean, he sort of helps gather everyone to save Scott. Why do you think the others think that Peter wants to help?
I don't know. See, I was watching this with someone else, and they were like, well, they still think he's good, right? And I was like, well, has anyone ever really, like, really thought that? Like, they really don't like him, but I guess, like, maybe they think he still wants, like, I guess they sort of know about the benefactor situation, which I guess is, like, completely, like, not even an issue anymore. But they believed that it was, like, you know, that Meredith was acting off, like, the rantings and ravings of a crazy person as opposed to... See, as I'm seeing it now that we've sort of seen what Peter wanted in terms of killing Scott in order to take back, like, the Hail Alpha line, which Scott didn't even get from him, so it's, like, crazy. Anyway, so he wanted to kill Scott. So that kind of does make me think that the benefactor thing, that he was being genuine about the benefactor thing. That, yes, it did come from his mind, but it was his crazy person mind and he wasn't actually still trying to do it, if you know what I mean. That he was like, yeah. Oh, this is happening. Oh, well, if you know what I mean. But he didn't want Scott dead because his plan was to kill Scott himself to become the Alpha again. So I'm assuming at this point that, benefactor plan was genuinely not actively, you know, Peter's choice. It was the rantings of an insane person interpreted by someone else with a very loose grip on reality. And so it was all actually just a big mess, not anyone's actual plan, if you know what I mean. That's what I'm getting at the moment. I mean, it might be totally wrong, but that's kind of what I'm getting at the moment. And that Peter was sort of apparently aware that this was happening, but, you know, just willing to let it go, except for Scott, you know, not wanting Scott to get killed so he could do the Scott killing himself. I don't know, man. But I don't know. Do they just think that he's, like, kind of still just, you know, basically, you know, well, he's not on anyone else's team, so I guess he's on our team kind of thing. He's just, you know, like, or because Derek still lets him hang around. I don't know.
I think maybe the thing that makes the most sense now that you say that is that, you know, he's not on anybody else's team, so he must be on our team. Because I don't know. I mean, if that was Malia that had gotten captured or Derek, I can understand why he would have been so frantic about wanting to go save him. And of course, we know why he's so frantic about wanting to get to Scott because he wants to be the one to kill him. But what is the point? Like, what do they think he wants? Maybe it has to do with Kate more than Scott and Kira. Maybe he just, you know, they think he just wants to defeat Kate and the Berserkers and get her, like, out of the picture. I think that probably would make the most sense. But you can see throughout this scene, Styles keeps looking at him like, what are you up to?
Why are you taking charge here? What the hell? Like,
exactly.
Can we just throw back to Liam for a second in terms of this gathering? And, you know, because the whole Liam issue is that they need to journey down to Mexico on a full moon, and Liam is really bad at his, transformation and control. And, you know, they're like, oh, can we, like, you know, chain me to the back seat or something? And he's like, Styles is like, you broke the last set of chains. We'd have to freeze you in carbonite. And he's like, okay, where do we get some carbonite?
Yes!
Styles' face is just like, are you serious?
There was this really long pause. Like, I mean, in a show like this, especially a finale, you need every single second to sort of keep the story moving. But there was a long pause where Styles is just like, no. Are you serious? You haven't seen Star Wars either? And it was, so good. I love that constant throwback.
Yeah, Dylan is so good at that with his face. He's the best person in the world of giving this look of, like, just this look of just incredulousness, like, just, I've seen a post on Tumblr, like, a million times, basically being, you know, someone's text post just saying, I wish there was a word for being able to express, like, a key smash, like, many question marks, exclamation mark, key smash, and someone just underneath posts a gif of Styles doing his, like, what, like, eyes, like, his thing with the eyes, like, no one does that kind of withering, like, are you serious, is this real look that he does. No one can do it like him. I've never seen anything like it, and it's incredible. Like, it's so funny, but yeah, I loved that. Yeah, just for any, you know, I don't think there's any listeners out there that wouldn't have got the carbonite joke, I hope, even though I hate Star Wars. But if you have not seen Star Wars, like Scott and Liam, yeah, that's the thing. One of the people gets frozen in a fake substance called carbonite. The end. But I loved that. It was so good.
Yeah, it was. Next up, we have Kira, who is trying to heal herself, and she sees her mother. Her mother sort of appears to her. She's not really there, and she kind of walks Kira through healing herself. And this, to me, and I think this was very deliberate. I don't think I'm just making random connections. Very much mirrored the scene with Victoria and Allison, and I love that they did this. It worked so well.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote down in my notes, why do Scott's girlfriends keep hallucinating their mums? But
at least Kira's mom wasn't dead.
Well, that's the thing. I'm like, what is going on there? Like, how do you explain these hallucinations? Like, we've talked, you know, last week, even about Liam seeing his berserker and how the lacrosse field, and how real it seemed. I mean, what are we meant to believe about hallucinations in the land of Teen Wolf, if you know what I mean? Like, is there any reality to them? Like, did Allison really see Victoria? Like, was it just a conversation inside her head? You know, is it her own thoughts? You know, is there any kind of, you know, supernatural element to that? And in this circumstance, like with Nashiko, who is very much alive, you know, is this just their way of showing what Kira, you know, would imagine, like sort of, you know, being practical and kind of imagining a conversation? Or is Nashiko not really there in person, but like really there in spirit? Is that a Kitsune thing? Like, was that conversation real? You know, given that she's not like dead and a ghost or anything, or so. I don't know, what do you think about these hallucinations so far?
I always assumed that they were real, that, like, Allison really did see her mother. I mean, in that one scene, her mother was sort of behind her, but I think, like, if she had turned around, like, she would have seen her. I don't think that it was her ghost or anything, but I think, you know, Allison was in such a high-stress situation that she was sort of hallucinating her mother, and it was her mind's way of helping her get through that situation, which is exactly what happened with Kira as well. And I think the fact that Kira was also in a high-stress situation and that she was dying, you know, her hallucination to me makes a little bit more sense because she was sort of on the edge there. And of course she would, you know, hallucinate her mom, who I think she really looks up to in terms of trying to learn to be a kitsune, even though we haven't seen, like, you know, her practicing or her mother actually sitting her down and explaining these things to her. But she is sort of, in a way, I guess, Kira's spirit guide, because she is much older and wiser and she knows how to be a kitsune. So it makes sense that she would hallucinate her. But I don't think it was like her mom was really there in spirit. I think it was just hallucination.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I was a little bit unsure, but, you know. I was a bit confused in the opening credits when I saw, you know, Tamlin Tomita's name there. I was like, okay, how's this going to work? And then there we go, basically.
Yeah. Back in the van, Liam starts to transform. Derek hands him this ancient talisman, which we know is fake. Oh, my God.
Can I just say I so love good. That? Like, I thought that I thought we were going to throw back to that talisman in a, like, we'll find out, you know, it was super important way because, you know, Kate was interested in it and all of that, like, nonsense, and, you know, and I was like, oh, you know, we're going to find out that it is actually a real big deal and that, you know, the saying it was a fake was a bluff. I love that they're saying it was a fake thing was true. Like, unless we find out heaps further down the line that it is actually super magical, but I love that they're, like, rolling with it and that little, like, look that, you know, Derek gives to Stiles being like, come on, contribute here. Yes. Like, it was just so good.
It was really good. But the talisman doesn't work on Leon. The mantra doesn't work. But Satomi's does. Why do you think Satomi's does?
I don't know. I can't really answer that question. Obviously, I can't really answer any of these questions. But I don't know. I mean, we've talked before about whether, you know, Satomi's pack, the people that are not necessarily the kind of actively fighting the good fight, you know, the people that are just sort of trying to chill and live their lives, if that's what Liam would end up wanting. And I don't know if that's a sign of that. I don't know if it's just like a, you know, Hail family thing with the Alpha, Beta, Omega thing. If maybe Born, it's not strong enough. Maybe, you know, Born werewolves have intrinsically more control or something like that. And, you know, maybe, but I mean, the Alpha, Beta, Omega thing didn't really seem to work for Derek once his mother had died. So maybe it was just more Talia's presence, you know, that actually helped. But I don't know. I don't know what the big deal is, you know, the sun, the moon, the truth situation. I feel like it might return in some way, especially if we're going to see people like Brett again or if Satomi comes back. But yeah, I don't know. It seems to be a bit more than is letting on, potentially.
Yeah, I agree. I'd really like to see it return. I mean, not just because I love Satomi, but I feel like this mantra, I think part of it is that Liam had to actually think of the answer. It wasn't just three words that don't really mean a whole lot to him right now. It was more like he had to answer this riddle that Stiles sort of presented to him.
Had he heard that before?
Did he know
that from Brett or whatever? Like,
I think even if we didn't see it happen on screen, because I don't remember if that was the case, I'm pretty sure he knew it, you know, they had probably talked about it off screen or something like that. Because yeah, he definitely knew the answer to it, and I don't think that's something that you could just, like, come up with on your own. So
yeah.
He definitely, like, he had to answer this riddle, which he already knew the answer to, but he did that, and he had to really focus on it. And I think the difference here is, like, Alpha, Beta, Omega obviously means a lot to Derek and to his family, but not necessarily to Liam, whereas I think the sun, the moon, the truth is something that you really have to think about, and you have to think, okay, these things can't be hidden. What does that actually mean? You know, especially the truth part of it. And I think it allowed him to sort of step back for a second and use his mind to kind of just think this through, and that helped him control it. So I don't know. Because it was more complex, I think, than Alpha, Beta, Omega, I think maybe that's why it calmed him down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because once we got the explanation of the Alpha, Beta, Omega, I thought that one was perfectly nice and actually a bit more, like, you know, widespread, like, general you know, seemed more widespread for general usage than The Sun, the Moon, the Truth. So I don't know. You know, different people are different, I suppose. But I actually thought that Derek's one was actually more of a good general one than the other one.
Yeah, hopefully it'll come back and maybe we'll get more of an answer to that.
Mm.
Speaking of Derek, he gets injured by the Berserker, which was really sad. And he tells the others to go save Scott. And we, you know, we already talked about this a little bit, but I really loved how Brayden was so concerned about him. I love how Styles was so concerned about him. He really didn't want to leave Derek. And I think that, you know, is a testament to how much Derek has been integrated into this pack. I mean, he's definitely a member of the group, and Styles doesn't want to leave anyone behind.
Yeah, there was a lot of feelings all around as well, because even when they go in, Derek kind of had that miserable little pipe up, and he was like, save him. Like, he really, like, Derek is so obsessed with Scott. And the very end of the episode as well, like, that look between Scott and Derek at the very end was, like, really intense, like, which we'll get to, but, like, it was really intense, and yeah, Derek definitely has a thing for Scott, you know, not in the way that Courtney says, but in general, he really has, you know, something going on, you know, very, very deep respect or hope or something like that. Like, something about Scott really brings him some sort of, you know, happiness and security and balance or something. So, yeah, just the way that he sort of piped up and he was like, make sure you save him, or, you know, just save him, whatever he said, like, you know, his dying wish, and, like, even what he, you know, said earlier to Brayden, where he didn't think he was going to come back, but it was okay if they were saving Scott. Like, yeah, I feel like he's more hung up on Scott than they've ever really explained. Like, yes, that, you know, we've had scenes where he's like, you know, I figured out that, you know, I need to help protect this town, and, you know, you're a better alpha and stuff like that. But, like, I don't know. I want to know the, you know, hidden inner depths and, like, you know, emotional range of Derek Hale and what his, like, private feelings for Scott really are, basically.
Wouldn't we all?
Yes. Yes.
Styles, though, gets a call from his dad, who is first furious, but then really understanding. And I loved the scene because so many times the parents are made into bad guys, or they're made out to be really stupid and they don't understand what's going on. And Teen Wolf has never done that. And I mean, Jeff has said in the past that that's very purposeful, but I think that this is a really realistic reaction to Styles going down to Mexico, because of course his father's going to be pissed off, but also he's like, look, his best friend is being taken by a werejaguar and her berserker minions. Like, of course he's going to go down there and try to save him. So he's just like, look, tell me what I can do and I'll get it done.
Yeah, you know, it's good that they're, I guess, practical and stuff like that. But yes, very tense. And I loved how everyone else was kind of like, what are you doing? Like, when he was just on the phone for like 15 minutes or however long he was on the phone. Like,
I love how the camera kept panning back to Peter. Like,
being like, what are you doing?
Two Shut or up. Three times. Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, seriously, you're taking a phone call right now.
Yeah. I also liked Sheriff being like, tell me you're safe. And Styles was like, do you want me to lie? Which was nice, I think, like, really, really kind of, you know, pretty hard-hitting, but nice.
It was nice that he didn't lie automatically, that
yeah.
he knew.
Yeah, sure, we're fine, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, and that's something, like, Styles would do, or, like, at least he'd play it off with humor, but the situation is so intense and so dire that he was like, look, Dad, I'm not going to lie to you. Things are not good, but this is what I have to do. And that's when the sheriff is like, fine, you know, tell me what I have to do.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess it's about now that we kind of figure out that Lydia is purposefully not there. Like, that there is, you know, some sort of a diversion, you know, that she is definitely being trapped away from the group because of what she could do if she was there, basically.
Yeah. But before we get into that, because I actually really love that scene, it was pretty awesome. But Parrish, Chris, and the Calaveras show up to fight Kate, which I think is a funny little amalgamation of, you know, the outsiders so far of mm-hmm. the group. And I love that they just all showed up, especially, I mean, obviously it makes sense that Parrish is there because he was with Chris, but I love that Parrish was there getting ready to jump into the fight, which he really doesn't know a whole lot about, but he's already feeling pretty loyal to this group of kids.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he even had any lines in this episode, did he? Like, not even any dialogue, but...
Not till the end, I don't think.
Oh, or not with Lydia, yeah.
Had a couple during the fight, like, I'm almost out of ammo, but, like...
Oh, yeah.
He was very... Yeah, he didn't have a whole lot.
Yeah, but, like, I was kind of... Because when I saw him show up, I'm like, oh, did the sheriff send down some, you know, reinforcements? But then, like... He's just been with Chris the whole time, like, doing their, like, odd couple gun-toting thing or whatever. But, yeah, and we find out that, obviously, Chris had this deal with the Calaveras that we never saw her, so that's fine, that's good. But still no real explanation about who Araya, you know, might be. But, yeah, poor Parrish being like, oh, this is where we're going, oh, this is who we're pointing guns at, okay, I guess I can do this kind of thing. Like, but, yeah, I mean, obviously it's set up for him to have a lot more next season as well.
Yeah. I am really curious about Araya still, because I want to know what her connection is. I don't, at this point, I'm not entirely sure she has a connection like we thought she did, because we were thinking, you know, is she Chris's mother? Is she connected somehow to the Argents more than just being another Hunter family? Is she Victoria's mother? I mean, we had been throwing around a lot of different theories, and we didn't really get an answer to any of them. So I really hope they show up again in season 5, because I want to learn more about the Hunters other than the Argents.
Yeah, I think that we will, or possibly will. But yeah, I always said possibly imagined more of a connection than there was. Did Araya end up surviving?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of, you know, as we said, a lot of Calaveras kind of just got, you know, cannon fodder in that fight because some people had to die. But yeah, definitely a pretty strong presence, so there's room for her, I'm sure. Though, given that we didn't lose any lead cast members or any real cast members at all, which is, you know, God... praise the Lord, I suppose, finale where it was just like, you know, oh, happy ending, or not that happy, but like no one actually died or like left for good or anything. You know, we're going to have a lot of cast members to be playing with next season. I mean, you know, obviously we had a lot this season as well, but yeah, we'll be managing quite a large group now if we're giving them all a story, if we're giving Parrish more of a story and Brayden more of a story as well. So are you looking forward to that, like to the extended group being so much bigger?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Although it makes me a little nervous about Chris and Kate and I guess the Calaveras, since they're sort of, you know, on the same mission. But, you know, are we really going to see them? Like, are they going to get their own kind of B-plot off to the side? Will Chris be coming back, you know, having just been like, oh, yeah, I found Kate, she's dead now, you know, story over. I hope they don't do that, because I think she really needs a conclusive finish to her story. But other than being worried that maybe Chris isn't going to be a huge part of season 5, I am super excited that everyone did survive. I mean, that obviously doesn't always happen on Teen Wolf, but I've really come to love Brayden a lot. I mean, obviously glad Derek didn't die. And, you know, we've got Malia and Kira, who are still sort of newbies. And it's just, it's nice that they all went through this really tough situation, and yet, because of the strength of their friendship, they came out on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, this whole season, I've just been thinking about each season. Like, season 1 finale, obviously Kate and Peter died. Neither of those really stuck. Season 2, a few people died throughout the season, like Victoria and stuff like that. And then in the end of the season, we had sort of the weird Gerard and Jackson situation. 3A, obviously, some people died, you know, like, obviously all of the Alpha Pack, Jennifer, so the villains kind of died, as well as Boyd and Erica throughout the course of the series. And then 3B, obviously, majorly, Allison and Aiden died, and various people throughout the season as well due to the Nagitsune. This season, I mean, yes, some people got decapitated, and I guess we got a couple of characters that we knew a little bit who died, like Garrett. But yeah, no major deaths, you know, for either our main villains or heroes. Yeah, everyone actually fared pretty well, despite the fact that there was, like, you know, all of these assassins and all of that kind of nonsense.
Yeah, and, you know, Brooke passed on to us an interview that Jeff just did post season four finale, and he said that not killing off Peter in particular, but I think, you know, a lot of other characters was very purposeful, because season three was so dark, and they, you know, first of all, love Ian Bowen and love Peter and want to keep him around. But I think this was smart, because season three was really dark and heavy, and it was great. It was a nice change from seasons one and two of Teen Wolf, which were, you know, kind of light and fun and cheesy. And yeah, it got a little dark here and there, but season three was obviously like pitch black. And coming into season four, we all needed a break from that, because it was very emotional for a lot of different reasons. And I think the fact that they decided to keep everyone alive, it was very smart from like a writer's standpoint, and knowing your audience and knowing they can't take too much more heartbreak.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, sort of also ask the question whether there's room in this show to have plots that aren't about people getting killed, if you know what I mean. I mean, no one got killed, but, you know, the plot was definitely about people potentially getting killed. You know, I'm not talking about having, like, you know, mundane, like, oh, Teen Wolf does the grocery shopping, though I would probably like that. But, you know, having a plot that was like a mystery that wasn't a death kind of mystery, if you know what I mean, like, that was a... you know, a supernatural mystery that wasn't like, oh my god, someone's gonna die. So, yeah, or like someone's killing people. Like, you know, do you think that that's sort of a necessary part of the show, that it has to have that kind of horror and violence element? Or do you think it could have kind of mysteries that aren't death related?
That's a really good question. I think that one of the things Teen Wolf has always done is sort of been a high-stakes show. I mean, they've killed off a lot of characters, some of them very minor, some of them major, obviously, some of them sort of in between, like Boyd and Erica, who were a big part of the show, but weren't necessarily, you know, the main group. And I think that I wouldn't necessarily want that to go away, because I think that's one of the most intriguing things about Teen Wolf. But at the same time, yeah, how much can these characters take before it becomes really unrealistic that they're sticking around Beacon Hills? And I think maybe in season five, we might possibly see something different, because they're obviously setting up the fact that Brayden knows the Desert Wolf, and that Malia's mother is the Desert Wolf. So possibly it'll be more of a mystery centered around that and what Parrish is, instead of like, oh, here's a new villain who's trying to destroy the world, let's stop him.
Yeah, I'd be pretty into that, actually.
Me too. But speaking of deaths, did you think Derek had really died?
No, they didn't linger on it long enough.
Yeah,
but that being said, I thought it was like he was going into, like, you know, shock or something like that, you know, like, oh, he's pretty much passed out and lost, and he was like just hanging on by a thread once Scott got out of the berserker head and would give him the bite. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. There was a split second where I was like, wait, what if... No.
I was kind of like, if that's his death scene, it's really understated for, like, one of the show's, like, top three characters. So, like, yeah, I was like, if that's his legit death scene, they've really underplayed it, and people are going to be mad, basically. So, I didn't think it was a real death scene, though. Like, not really.
Yeah, and I was like, they can't kill off Derek. Derek's too important. So, well, then again, they did kill off Allison. But, yeah, I didn't really think that Derek had died, but I wasn't entirely sure what was going on. But we will get to that later, because there's lots to say about that. For now, though, I want to talk about Lydia having a baseball bat, because she looked freaking awesome.
Yeah, what did she say when she pulled it out, when Mason's like, really, a baseball bat? Like, she said something funny.
Oh, God, I don't remember now.
She said something about, you know, I assume it was a throwback to Styles always having the bat, if you know what I mean, but I can't remember the exact words of it. Oh, well, that was a funny joke.
But Lydia was really cool, kind of bringing Mason into the fold. Mason was amazing. He attacked the Berserker even though he had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, I loved that. Like, you know, like she kind of gave that little pep talk about the baseball bat and, like, what she was doing and, you know, how, you know, she had to go and do that. Like, you know, my friends, if they need me, they're not going to stop. And Mason's kind of like, and she goes ahead and then Mason, like, kind of processes her little pep talk and then runs in screaming ahead of her. You know what I mean? It's so cute.
Yeah, I loved it. And Sheriff Stilinski ends up saving the day with a bomb, which, okay, for one, was really amazing and I loved it. Perfect timing, but that was kind of dangerous. Good thing Lydia and Mason saw that it was coming and could, like, duck and hide.
Yeah, and sorry to the school board for that damage caused as well. But, like, you know, whatevs.
I would say it was worth it. So then the group realizes Scott's the Berserker. And the only way he is saved, not from Kira, not from Styles, which I was really expecting it to be, again, because we've seen before that they have a really strong connection, but it's when Liam says, you're not a monster, you're a werewolf like me. Perfect throwback line. I loved that it was Liam who, I think, kind of really understood what Scott had been doing for him all along and wasn't willing to give up on him. And this finale episode was really very much focused on Scott's connection with Liam as sort of his one definite, I bit you, you turned into a werewolf, and I beat it now kind of person.
Yeah, I definitely, again, like, thought that this played into what we've sort of been saying all season about the intrinsic beta connection, you know, beta-alpha connection that's not just, you're my best friend in the human world and, you know, we chose each other and I can yellow crayon you out of a pool of gasoline. That's one thing. But when we're talking about the animalistic side, when we're talking about the actual, like, you know, werewolf part, I think that this is another, you know, tick in the column for the whole idea of, you know, the alphas, alpha and beta having a very, a connection that is, you know, for both parties, not just, you know, an emotional response that they've had naturally, that it's something, I don't like to say forced, but that it's something, you know, beyond their control, you know, a supernatural connection, a, you know, a mental connection, an emotional connection that's more than just, you know, two people developing, you know, whatever kind of feelings for each other, that it is actually, you know, that it is tied into their werewolfiness as opposed to their humanity, which, you know, obviously their humanity is a big part of them as well. But I think that there's something going on there that wasn't just, you know, two guys having a chat about being a werewolf, if you know what I mean. It was,
yeah,
it was more than that. And I think that, you know, Styles or, you know, Derek or anyone could have said the same things to him and it wouldn't have worked. I don't think it was just, ooh, Liam said this thing that reminded him of who he was. I think it was to do with the alpha beta bond and how, you know, whatever that actually entails on, like, a physical or chemical or, you know, instinctive level. I really think the instinctive bond, which they've never spoken about, you know, they've said having betas makes you stronger and, like, losing one makes you feel like, you know, bad and stuff, you know, losing a limb, and I think one of the biggest things we've seen it with was actually Ennis back in season 3A when his beta, I think called Marco or something, when, you know, he goes to the hospital to try and get his body and stuff like that, and like his kind of emotional reaction. I don't think that we haven't actually seen too much, you know, alpha beta bonds. A lot of the alphas we've seen don't have betas, or a lot of, you know, the only one we've really seen is like terrible, you know, Derek being terrible with his teenagers. And I mean, even they were very, you know, attached to him. But yeah, we haven't seen too much of what that bond entails and, you know, what it, you know, can cause people to do and feel. But I'm sure there's something more to it than just simple, you know, chosen feelings. I'm 100% sure.
Yeah, definitely. And what I really loved about this scene was that it showed that this connection goes both ways, because we've known the power that an alpha has over their beta. We saw that right in season one when Peter was able to sort of control Scott. And so we knew that Scott had this connection with Liam and that it would help him get through the changes and whatever he was doing, and that Scott would be able to control him in a way to make sure he wouldn't, you know, hurt anyone, because Scott would never do anything, you know, control him in sort of like an evil mastermind kind of way. But I loved the fact that we saw that it happened the other way as well, that Liam was the one person who could really get through to Scott, that alpha beta connection was so important that he was able to kind of get through the berserker guys and stop Scott, because that's pretty powerful, I think.
Yeah, it is. And it's like, I don't know, it kind of makes me wonder, like, you know, it kind of makes me think of, like, you know, the sixth sense that people talk about, like, with, you know, either, like, you know, twins who, you know, oh, I know when my twin got hurt, or, like, mothers knowing that their baby's crying even when they can't hear them and stuff like that, you know? Kind of makes me think of that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, definitely. So what ends up happening next is Scott breaks free of his berserker guys, and we basically realize that Peter is behind everything, and he wants power, and he wants to be the alpha. And, I mean, I don't think this was a shock to anybody, but it was nice seeing that everybody finally realized what Peter was up to.
I didn't really get what happened here, honestly. Like, he broke out of the, you know, the berserker suit, which is nice, and he became himself again, which is nice. But he had this realization about Peter, and it was, you know, just to do with, you know, apparently him being the only other person besides Chris who knew this much about the berserkers, so that he thought that, you know, he was in on the plot with Kate, or he'd taught Kate how to do that. And like we said earlier at the episode, we don't really know when this would have occurred, so we're not too sure about, you know, what that implication is. But yeah, what, like, did you get any impression of, like, how Scott realized this, or when he realized it, or basically, yeah, how he finally saw through Peter? Because honestly, I didn't realize that the group thought Peter was, like, that good, if you know what I mean. Like, I thought that they knew he was, like, pretty much shady, especially after they just found out about the Deadpool. Like, not, you know, even though I actually don't blame him for the Deadpool still, you know, I didn't think that they actually trusted him, so.
I don't think that they trusted him, but I don't think that they realized the extent to which he would go to get power. So I think it was still sort of surprising on that level. But to answer your question about how Scott knew, at first I thought it was just kind of like a logical conclusion that it came to, because he figured out that, yeah, the only other person who knew enough about berserkers would have been Peter, and Peter's been hella shady, so of course this would have happened. But the thing is, Kate told her story in front of Scott when she was talking to Kira, and it makes me wonder how aware Scott was while he was inside the berserker.
Yeah, I mean, I did assume that, like, he'd kind of heard the story and worked out the person in the story was Peter. But yeah, that kind of sucks if he was, like, trapped in his own head while doing that kind of stuff.
Ugh.
Poor Scott.
I know. But okay, time to talk about Derek. I'm really excited about this. So we find out that Derek did not die, or maybe he did kind of die. I don't think he actually died, but he's still alive. That's the important thing. He comes back as a full-blown wolf, which is the black wolf that we've seen in the opening credits, and he says that he's evolved, and now he's got his werewolf powers back, he has his blue eyes back, and he is, you know, Jeff has said in some interviews after the finale aired that this is sort of like the zenith of his power. Like, if you can transform into a full-blown wolf, then you've got something pretty special. And this is what Derek has now.
I'm happy for him, but I hate this evolution thing.
You hate the word evolution?
Well, no, not just that. There's no explanation for this. He just sat there and died and then apparently evolved into a full-blown wolf. We have no real explanation of how Kate's work was undone or why he got his powers back or how they evolved, if you know what I mean. Like, or if that was going on in the background the whole time. Like, we don't know, like, how, you know, how his problem of his human, you know, his powers being sapped away was solved, if you know what I mean. I don't know if I'm missing something here, but I don't think that it was explained very well in terms of, you know, them... you know, him basically dying and then coming back as this, you know, newly improved Derek. You know, was that just what happened to happen the whole time? Like, if he'd killed him at any point in this humanity thing, would he just, you know, turned into the mega wolf? Because they might have wanted to do that earlier if that was the case. But yeah, I'm into the fact that he is, like, so zen and beautiful and that he's, like, learned from his experiences that he can be this, like, pure... you know, form, if you know what I mean, that like his form of being a werewolf is like the not just the best and most powerful, but sort of the most pure as well, you know, in terms of being a good and lovely person and a, you know, respected person, and especially that he can do that without being an alpha, if you know what I mean, because we didn't really know that, you know, betas or, you know, people who aren't alphas can do any kind of fancy transformation. But I don't know how it happened. I don't understand the evolution thing. Like, yeah, it's all very well and good for them to say, I was evolving. Okay, you're not giving me anything here. Like, you're not giving me any real answers as to how. And you know, why Kate's thing was undone. Like, what kickstarted it? Like, is it just like, oh, he's dying and then he evolved into the next thing? Like, was that... We don't even know what Kate was doing by de-aging him. And none of that makes any sense to me still.
Well, okay, here's my thought on this. Because I think there's still plenty of unanswered questions, especially when it comes to Kate. But mm-hmm. the only parallel that I can really, like, see is Jackson was the Kanema. And then Jackson died, and he came back as a werewolf because he was sort of purged as the Kanema. And I think that... Derek was human, and he died, I guess we can say that, and because he had sacrificed himself, which was something that he had been struggling with for quite a while, I mean, he had wanted all the power like Peter did and finally gave it up. He's human now. He died. He put his life in front of, you know, he sacrificed himself for Scott and for everybody else, really. And that sort of allowed when he died to kind of go to this next form. And that's what ended up saving his life.
Okay. I'm not quite sure, but okay.
I mean, obviously that's just a theory, but I think that the closest thing we've seen to this so far has been Jackson's...
Yeah, the Jackson thing I do get, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just disappointed that, you know, Scott didn't give him the bite. But but in general, I love the result. Like, I love that he is, like, this pure, zen, natural wolf. I think it's fantastic.
Who can kill a berserker? I mean, that was pretty awesome. Also, Nick and Derek
so
fighting.
And it's so much prettier than Derek's, like, wolf transformation face, if you know what I mean.
But I just kept laughing. Like, it was a very serious scene, and I'm totally in love with it, but I kept laughing because he is basically fighting everything naked. And
yeah, he definitely was.
He definitely was, and I tried not to think about it too much.
Okay, but I'm crossing my fingers for some, like, awkward naked Derek scenes, like, in the next, you know, season. Like, oh, he does his transformation, but he has to, like, untransform in the middle of, like, the street somewhere, like, in a populated area, like, or something like that.
Some, like, I really want this to be, like,
behind a tree. Like, a meme, like, an ongoing joke.
Yes, like, a running gag where it's just like, oh, God, Derek's naked again. And everybody, like, turns around and someone just throws, like, a pair of pants in his face.
Yeah, like, Styles carries an extra pair of, like, jean shorts with him at all times or something like that. And he gets, like, great pleasure in, like, you know, carrying, like, the stupidest extra t-shirts with, like, lame logos on them and stuff like that. Like, and he, like, forces Derek to wear these, like, terrible clothes.
And they're really tight, like, in that Miguel scene.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. I want it so bad. Okay, anyway, enough about naked Derek. hopefully we get more of that in season 5. But aside from that, Chris ends up shooting Kate with a yellow wolfsbane bullet. And I think this
was magic stuff he was growing in his, like, hydroponic weed, like, lab or whatever he was doing. Like,
yes, exactly. And I think this was a long time coming. And I think, I mean, honestly, the line that he says perfectly sums it up. He says, I don't want to kill you, but I'm not sure I want to save you either. And I think that, I don't think there's really a whole lot more to say about that, because that is literally just a perfect description. Obviously, he doesn't want to kill his sister, but she's done some pretty terrible things, and he's not sure that she's worth saving anymore.
Yeah, what the hell is so special about this yellow wolfsbane? Is it, like, totally hard to grow? Does it only, like, bloom in the light of, like, the silvery moon once every, like, 14 months or something? Because, like, seriously, why aren't they using these trank bullets for everything?
I think it's really rare. The thing is this different than the yellow wolfsbane that we saw Garrett and Violet use?
I mean, I think so. I assume this is the yellow flower that he had in his, like his one plant in the middle of all his other plants, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but Garrett and them, like, the orphans, they were saying how they had this yellow wolfsbane. It was really rare, and it was, like, super poisonous.
Yeah, well, maybe there's 5 million different types of wolfsbane, you know, and I want the one that gives them the effect of acting like, you know, they're drunk. Like, I don't want any rave music. I want wolfsbane that, like, they, you know, can use like a casual party drug.
Well, I mean, Peter was acting a little drunk at the
end. Oh my God, that was so good.
Which we'll get to in a minute, but yeah, I think that maybe we saw a little bit of that. But yeah, so Kate runs off, and that's all whatever.
Well, there was a lot of times in this episode I thought half the cast were going to die, like, at different points.
Yeah.
Derek, I was like, okay, I don't think he's going to die, but they've kind of, if they've made it that, then all right. Then I thought, like, Brayden was going to die in his place. I thought both Chris and Kate were going to die, like, that they were going to sort of die together, if you know what I mean. Like, that Chris would, you know, kill her or, you know, cause her to be killed, but then sort of didn't want to actually, you know, okay, done my final bit, not carrying on, if you know what I mean. Not like a suicide, but kind of just like he was injured and let go, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I actually thought that Scott's, you know, last mega punch, like, broke Peter's neck, and killed, yeah, so many people. I was surprised by the end. They're like, oh, Peter's alive, oh, Kate's off, oh, Chris is fine, okay, we're rolling with it. Like,
yeah.
I really thought, like, that quite a lot of characters had gotten their fatal blow, basically.
Yeah, me too, and, I mean, I can't believe I forgot to write this down, but let's not pass over the fact that Kate basically was doing all of this because she was pissed off at Scott and the others for the fact that
Allison
died.
Killed. Yeah.
Yes, and I think that was really good. I mean, when you kill off a major character like Allison, there needs to be this constant reminder that it's still affecting everybody. And I love the fact that Kate, I mean, horrible, horrible Kate, who is a horrible human being, let alone a horrible supernatural monster, she she cared a lot about Allison. And for her, it all came back to that. And I love that Chris had that counter argument that was like, look, she died saving her friends. And obviously he's not okay with that. And he's still really upset about it. But she had sort of this, you know, going down in blazing glory type of death, doing what she thought was right. And for Chris, that's good enough.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, he's used to people close to him sort of dying in the line of duty, and for Allison, that's what that was. Kate's entire motivation, what, like, you know, was that her idea of punishing Scott for Allison's death? Like, or, you know, punishing all of them? Like, is that meant to be the whole thing, or was any of it just that she was crazy?
Well, I definitely think she's crazy, but I think that, yeah, she wanted to punish Scott. She wanted to turn him into a monster, and she wanted his friends to end up killing him.
Yeah, that's some pretty convoluted stuff, Kate.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of logic there, but, I mean, and I'm not defending Kate, because she is a terrible human being, but she has gone through a lot since we've seen her in season one. And, yeah, I guess I'm kind of glad she didn't die, actually, by the end of the episode. Because I just really love Jill Wagner, and I think she brings this incredible charisma to Kate, and I would really like to see more of her.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be interesting, and you know, if she's on the run, I'm curious. I still think that her story might end up tying into this Desert Wolf stuff as well. Like, not that she is the Desert Wolf. We know, you know, we know that she's not at this point, you know, and she's not Malaya's mother or anything like that. Though it was kind of implied, not implied, but speculated for a while. But yeah, she's on the run. You know, Desert Wolf's running somewhere, you know, mysteries, and so, yeah, could all cross paths later on.
Yeah, that would be cool. So, sort of wrapping up the episode, because we've got, basically, you know, these bullet points of things being wrapped up here. First, we have Scott, who was fighting against Peter. Peter looked like he was winning, but Scott sort of looked to Liam when Peter threw, like, that bench or whatever it was at him, and he wanted to defend Liam, and I think he finally embraced the fact that he had a pack, and he drew on that power, and all of a sudden, Peter was no match for him. And I love that we are seeing, not only does the Alpha have this sort of connection and control over his betas, but his betas give him power, and yeah, it's been said before, but having finally seen it was really, really nice.
Yeah, like that whole, like, you know, you're stronger with a pack. Again, it was like, to me, it was like, again, like one of those very intrinsic, instinctive things, again, tied into that idea of the beta, you know, the uncontrollable beta bond. And it's like, you know, reminds me of those, you know, urban legends of, you know, mother lifting a car off their baby, if you know what I mean. That's kind of what it made me think of.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, Scott became like this ninja who could, like, you know, catch every punch Peter was throwing, basically. He just became this, like, super, like, you know, fighter of, like, you know, something, you know, beyond his own consciousness. So that was nice, too.
That was awesome.
Yeah. And then he, like, ends up, like, taking Peter out, and I basically thought that he'd killed him. I thought that it was going to be, like, you know, oh, that's his one kill, if you know what I mean. Like, because, oh, yeah, Peter already died, so it doesn't really count. It's not, like, that bad that I've killed him, if you know what I mean. Like, he, you know, the natural order of things says he should be dead. It doesn't matter if I just take him out. He's already meant to have died twice. You know, I'm just sort of putting nature back to rights. It's not actually like killing someone, and I thought that he'd taken him out, but then at the very end, you know, end of the episode, we find out no, he punched him out, and then and they've drugged him with the yellow stuff to get him back to Beacon Hills and to Icon House.
Were you disappointed when you thought that Peter was dead?
Yes, but I mean, I wasn't that surprised, if you know what I mean. I was a little bit, I thought he was dead much more than I thought Derek was dead, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Also, can I just say, yes, just throwing right back to when Derek was dead or dying, Peter, you know, also looked concerned when they were leaving Derek.
Yes.
Peter,
yes, definitely.
Peter does care about Derek. And I think it's little things like that. And I mean, I think this is just like Ian Bowen's battle of wills with the writers, if you know what I mean, in terms of giving Peter redeemable qualities. You know, they can give him whatever scripts they want to make Peter evil, but they can't take away the looks on his face. And he still definitely, you know, puts a lot of depth into his looks. And, you know, for better or worse, he does actually seem to care about Derek, whether that's just because he cares about, like, the honour of his family, even if Derek is just, like, one pathetic little corner of his family left or whatever. But, yeah, when Derek was like, no, you all go on without me, you know, Peter was looking very hurt and worried, so there was that, you know, little bit of niceness, I guess. I was disappointed, you know, at the idea that he was dead, but I was overall more disappointed at him just being that outright evil and dumb. Like, not that the writing is dumb, just he is a character. He's really dumb. Like, if he thinks this is a solution, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, and we don't know if this is like, oh, he's still a little bit crazy, or if this is totally, like, conscious in his idea of logic, if you know what I mean. Like, because he seems to have this idea, you know, that he... You know, that Scott stole this power that he doesn't deserve from the Hale, you know, the legacy of the Hales or whatever, you know, because Peter was the Alpha and then he wasn't anymore and now Scott's the Alpha. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's not precisely how it worked. But, you know, he thinks that, you know, he should still be, you know, an Alpha of the Hales and that he wants to take that from Scott, which is getting into a little bit of delusional territory. So I don't know how sane Peter is. You know, I think we're meant to get the impression that he's sane but super evil.
And he's healthier now.
Yeah, I think we're meant to think that he's sane but really evil, and that's not my favourite idea of Peter. I can take crazy, and I can take sane and, like very complex but slightly remorseful, but I don't like the idea of him being sane and super evil, so that will always kind of disappoint me. I mean, I think that's just, you know... something, you know, for Ian Bowen, in the same way that Jeff said, like, you know, it's a sign of, you know, just someone's work as an actor that you really don't want to kill them off and you do anything against killing them off and you keep bringing them back, which is what they've done with Peter. Mm-hmm. So they clearly, you know, like his work a lot as well. I just don't know where he'll go from here, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, will he finally, you know, will this be the thing that turns him around to being... you know, redeemed, like, you know, once and for all, he went for his power and then realized it was a bad plan. They show him doing some pretty crappy stuff, like, you know, smacking Malia across the room and stuff like that, so...
We'll talk about this later, sweetheart.
That was gross.
I think...
So, yeah.
I think with Peter, my general stance is that I would have been okay if he had died, because I think that would have been an appropriate solution to the problem. And I think that I never want Scott to kill anybody, but if he's going to kill somebody, like, Peter would have been acceptable, I think. But at the same time, I'm really, really glad that he didn't die for Scott's sake, but also just because the end of the episode where the last time we see him was so interesting, and I'm really excited to explore that part. But before we get there, I want to talk about Chris leaving with the Calaveras to go after Kate, because I'm really glad that he has this mission, because I'm really afraid when he no longer has a mission, no longer has, like, a reason to live, he's just going to let go. And I really thought that's what was going to happen at the end of this episode, like you were saying. Uh-huh. And now that he's decided to go with the Calaveras after Kate, you know, he's still trucking along, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't sound too thrilled about it, obviously. He doesn't really want to hunt down his own sister, but, you know, he seems to still have some sort of hope of, you know, getting her, even though, you know, even despite what he said to her. But, yeah, I mean, found out he made a deal weeks ago with the Calaveras to leave Scott's pack alone, that they're not going to... Because right at the beginning of the season, you know, you see Araya being like, you know, just you wait, Scott, wait till you bite someone and I cross the border and come and hunt you. Apparently that's not going to be happening now. So we have some more, like, semi-allies for Scott and his pack, I suppose. So I guess, yeah, I mean, Araya discovered, you know, what kind of alpha Scott is, which is nice. But, yeah, I don't know how this will be for Chris, this journey of hunting Kate.
Me neither. I just hope we see it in season 5. I really want to revisit that. We also find out that Brayden was a U.S. Marshal, that this wasn't just, like, a joke or a disguise, a cover, which I think is amazing because I really thought it was a cover the whole time. But she was a U.S. Marshal.
Well,
but
it was a cover the whole time you've seen it, but, like, you know.
Well, yeah.
It didn't come from nowhere.
Right. But her obsession with the Desert Wolf made it hard for her to keep her job because she was always looking for this Desert Wolf, which obviously, you know, bells should be going off because, like you said in the beginning of this episode, this is sort of like her mystery, but it also ties in with Malia because we know the Desert Wolf is Malia's mother. So pretty cool connection there, I think.
And, I mean, it sounds like she was kind of a shady character, the Desert Wolf, as well, if the U.S. Marshals were after her. And as well, you know, she was one of the people that that Peter named in terms of the list of assassins that, you know, killers that the Deadpool could go out to when he was doing his ranting and ravings. So, yeah, I mean, it could be even that, you know, the Desert Wolf isn't Malia's mother, but the Desert Wolf was responsible for Malia's mother's death or something like that. Like, you know, we know that it's a connection to Malia's mother, but we don't know whether it's actually her mother. I mean, I think it is, but there could be some options there, if you know what I mean. There could be some different options as to who the hell this person is. Presumably someone we've never seen before or anything like that. It's not just going to turn around and be like, lol, Melissa McCall is the Desert Wolf.
Oh, man, that would be a twist.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would be okay with that.
No, I don't think that's what it is.
Yeah. I'm really excited to have a brand new female character who obviously can take care of herself. I would be okay if she was kind of shady as long as she wasn't, like, downright evil. I don't think Malia needs that in her life considering Peter is her father. But
I want to know how she and Peter hooked up. Like, I want to know how this even happened.
Yeah.
And if she's really bad, then that makes me wonder about, you know, we've asked many times that, you know, why Talia took that memory from Peter about, you know, what could have Peter done when he was, you know, 19 or 20 years old or however old he was when he, you know, had Malia. What could have he done that's so bad that made Talia just think he shouldn't have the, you know, child and nothing? You know, what if it wasn't him? You know, what if it was her? Like, what if it was like, no, little brother, you must not associate with that bad lady. You must forget that this ever happened, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Wow. I would love some more Talia flashbacks for season 5 with this storyline. That would be really awesome.
Yeah. I'm just
another
thinking
highlight.
About the wolf. Maybe Derek will go into the dream state and his wolf will talk to his mommy's wolf.
Aww. Okay. Another highlight for the end of this episode for me was the fact that Kira's father turned that piece of obsidian she used to heal herself into a throwing star, which was Kira's first tail. I really wasn't expecting this to happen, and it was a nice twist, another look into the lore of the Kitsune. And I really hope they explore her powers more in season 5 because I think she needs a little bit more than just, you know, her sword play, which is obviously amazing, but I think she would be a much stronger opponent against the people they're fighting if she could rely on her electricity more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that tails are things that they had to be found, if you know what I mean, or obtained or created. Like, you know, I was under the impression that they just... Pardon?
like, earned almost.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking, you know, originally that they were, like they just had them, if you know what I mean, in to start with, you know, and then they eventually got knocked off, like, you know, nine lives of a cat or whatever, as opposed to, like, building them up and then potentially getting them taken away if you want to use up the power
yes.
from them. It seems like, you know, you use a certain amount of power and you obtain one, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, that you know, and that it kind of stores power. And then obviously we learn, you know, later that you can, you know, break them to use up the power for, you know, whatever you're doing, like making Oni or whatever it is you want to do with the tail power. But yeah, I wasn't expecting kind of the build up as well as the breaking down. I kind of thought it was like, oh, you start with nine and then you lose them.
Mm-hmm. And I love that Jeff on Wolfwatch said that a nine-tailed kitsune is like the most powerful kitsune, but there's also a thousand-tailed kitsune. And while I can imagine if Kira went through all of that to get her first tail, what it means to be a thousand-tailed kitsune, and I don't know if that's even possible for Kira to build up to something like that, but I love the idea that perhaps, you know, as powerful as Nishiko was, maybe Kira will even surpass that, and I would love to keep seeing her collect these tails over the course of the series, because she obviously has to go through a lot to get them, and I think that's just like a really intriguing sort of side point to her character.
I also appreciate that they're not literal tails, and that no one in this in this show has a literal tail except yes. Derek now.
That's true. Aw, Derek has a tail. Yeah. I really liked that her tail was a throwing star. I thought that was cool. And I don't know if she's going to end up using it, because obviously that's kind of dangerous, but I would love to see that, though.
Yeah. But, you know, because Nishiko's with those kind of knife blade things, I wonder what else they could be, if they could be, like, you know, hair bows or door stops or anything, you know, like
door stops.
They have to be some form of weapon, like forks. What if I want nine obsidian forks to be my tails?
Nine obsidian forks?
Forks. A fork.
Fork. Like what you eat with?
Yes, a fork.
Okay, I thought you were saying fox, like, you know, the phoenix, and I got really confused.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Accents. Forks, okay.
I'll try and say forks like you, shall I? I can't, I don't think. It sounds too stupid. not from you, it sounds stupid. Like, oh, to me it doesn't sound any different. Anyway, forks. Do I have to do this? Forks.
Oh, that was good.
No, that doesn't even sound like a word on my end. Anyway, let's move on. Anyway, yeah, like nine obsidian teacups or something, you know, like.
Ooh, I could get behind that.
All right.
Okay, so then we find out that they put the bestiary into an actual book. Hooray! This is really exciting to me. As somebody who was, I'm sorry, I'm bringing in another Charmed reference. Somebody who was always obsessed with the Book of Shadows from Charmed and wanting to actually get my hands on like a physical copy of it, and just knowing that you could flip to any page and there's like this new information. Of course, the Book of Shadows kind of grew on its own, but I just love that they have a physical copy of the bestiary now, and that Lydia really wants to help Parrish figure out what he is.
Yeah, I mean, and then obviously they put those drawings in it, you know, from the sample bestiaries that they gave out at Comic-Con as well, which is nice. But yeah, Parrish and Lydia, I mean, still no progression there in terms of the romance. But
I'm okay with that. Yeah. I'm willing to let it kind of simmer for a little while. I'm curious as to who actually created the bestiary. I mean, it's a little detail, but if Lydia drew the pictures in there, because, you know, we know she's supposed to be like a pretty good artist. But I think that would be cool just to see her kind of going through the book like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice. I would like Lydia. I don't know. Obviously, had a reason, like, not to be in the thick of the action this episode, but I did miss her a bit for the finale.
I missed her a lot in this season. I mean, she's been around, and the parts that were centered around her were very concentrated and very detailed and gave us a lot about her and her family and about Banshees, but they were spaced out a lot, and I miss her kind of being in the thick of the action. And I think there was a reason, like in this episode, where she wasn't meant to be there, that, you know, that was kind of part of the plot, which is totally fine. But I hope in season 5, as she helps Parrish figure out what he is and maybe learn more about his powers, she can learn more about hers as well and be a little bit more integrated into everything.
Yeah.
So, last point is that Peter gets locked up in Eichenhaus, and yeah, he's basically drunk on Yellow Wolf's Bane, which was hilarious.
And his accent goes all southern.
Yes, it does. Okay, I don't think you've seen The Walking Dead, but he reminds me of Merle Dixon, who has this very strong... Well, it's Yondu from Guardians of the Galaxy. Same guy, same actor.
Karen, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, no. All right, what? We're going to talk about that later. But anyway...
I hate space, Karen.
What?
I hate anything in space.
Okay. Anyway,
you're like, I'm not talking to you anymore. I'm just going to get through this last point, and then we're done professionally.
Yeah. for anyone who hasn't seen The Walking Dead but has seen Guardians of the Galaxy, Yondu, same actor.
Okay.
But he has this very strong southern accent, and it's just kind of like this hillbilly backwoods sort of guy. And yeah, I mean, that's basically what Peter sounds like drunk, apparently, which... was amazing, but he ends up in a cell with Dr. Valak, and he...
I feel like it's a bad plan for them to, like, be sharing, like, cells in this institution.
I do too, but I think that it's worse for Peter. Like, I don't think the two of them are really gonna team up. I think maybe the consequences of them being in the same cell will mean Peter goes even crazier than he already is.
Oh,
but
cool.
I don't think they're going to team up and, like, take over the world or anything.
No. And, I mean, Peter seems pretty freaked out when he had to look in the magic eye. So, yeah. I don't know. But I just feel like, you know, for everyone's well-being, you know, which is, you know, somewhat of a concern even when you're in a kind of, you know, prison or institution. I mean, Eichenhaus isn't fantastic at that, but they are meant to kind of have people's well-being in mind. I don't think that they should be having people sharing rooms, really, especially people who are that, like, risky to each other.
Yeah, and that's my thing. Everything that we've heard of Dr. Valak so far, which granted isn't much, kind of paints him as this really, really horrible dude that you don't even have to be in the same physical room as him, and you can still be affected by him, obviously, if, you know, it happened to Deaton. And so he seems like a dangerous dude, and Peter's pretty dangerous too, but to put anyone in that cell kind of feels like a death sentence to me. I don't know, but I'm really happy that Dr. Valak is back. I hope he comes back for season 5. I'm really interested to learn more about him. But also, and I've been saying this since episode 1 of the podcast, we got another little look into what this world of Teen Wolf contains with this, you know, passageway to Eichenhaus. And I feel like they're really expanding the universe. And I really, really want to explore that in season 5 now that we have a physical copy of the bestiary, now that we know that what, like, Eichenhaus has that secret floor with all these creatures. And it's so exciting.
And I mean, obviously, we've got our, you know, good friend Parrish to discover as well. And
Yes. So, overall, what did you think of this episode as a finale to season 4?
I liked it. As I said, I liked the results, but I'm not too sure about the execution on how they got to the results for some of the things. Like, as I said, kind of the Kate and Peter explanation and Derek's evolution as well. Scott and Liam, I really like that kind of solution, but again, I kind of want tangible evidence of this, magical alpha beta bond. I want, you know, someone to sit down and have a talk about it on the show, if you know what I mean. Like, why do I have all these feelings for this guy I barely know? If you know what I mean. It's like, honey, it's called puberty. No, not really. I'm joking. But like, you know, for them to address that their connection is like, even if it was done in a kind of funny way, or like Styles doing it and being, you know, like, being like, Scott, you and Liam are getting kind of creepy about each other. Obviously, there's going to be a bit of fun with that because of that cute scene with Coach at the end as well.
Yes.
Which was great.
It but, was.
But, you know, even if it was played with Styles being kind of funny and, like, you know, you and Liam, like, I know that you guys are like, and Scott's like, I don't know how to explain it, man. It's just, like, it feels different. Like, it's not just, like, a normal friend and, like, blah, blah, blah. And, like, yeah, and I would like some explanation of the alpha-beta kind of instinctive bond. We've obviously got a lot in terms of, like, oh, being around him calms me, but I want it put into words that it's different, basically. Yeah. I'm just really hung up on that, apparently. But, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty glad no one died, but the fact that no one died kind of made it feel like a little bit less of a, like, massive climax.
I don't know. I feel like this really opens the door to season 5, which, yeah, I can understand how, like, there weren't any serious consequences to what we've been building up to the entire season, but I feel like they've kept so much of the story open to go into season 5 that I'm really okay with the fact that nobody died, but...
Oh, I'm okay with it, don't get me wrong.
For me, I don't know, I love this episode. I think, yeah, I still definitely have some questions. I'm actually going to do up an article, like the top 10 questions we have from season 4 that we want to see answered in season 5, and put that on Hypeable sometime very soon. But I thought this was a fantastic episode. Definitely have some questions. Definitely not sure about some timeline stuff. But overall, I think the character growth was fantastic. There were some really deep scenes and some really funny moments. And it was just a good, entertaining episode. And yeah. I think for a finale, it really wrapped up a lot of stuff that I was curious about and opened the door to other things as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm very, very happy with it. I was just kind of possibly bracing myself for more given past events, I think.
Yes, fair enough. So I think that's pretty much it for the recap section.
Wow, yay, season 4.
Yeah, so I guess we'll jump into the non sequitur.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have much, we actually haven't really gone looking. Honestly, because, you know, it's finale and everything's a giant mess, but, like, feedback and stuff like that. But we're definitely going to be doing some episodes in the, interim period between now and season 5. So we're going to have plenty of time to read meta and feedback and, questions and all of that kind of stuff from season 5. You know, could probably do a whole episode just on, you know, just submitted discussion points from people, probably. And yeah, so we're not going to get into sort of feedback right now. We're just going to leave the episode alone. But Karen, you know, if you want to take it away with a non sequitur section, just to finish us up, we'll do that.
Yeah. I was wondering, what was the one thing you always thought you would be or do when you grew up?
I never had anything.
Really?
Yeah. I've never had goals my entire life. Stuff just happens to me. I've never had anything that I really wanted.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I remember actually really struggling with this at school in terms of, like, personal development class and their, like, goal setting and stuff. I'm like, I don't really even understand. Like, I was like, I don't get it. Like, and I literally had to make stuff up and lie to pass.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I've never had goals. I've got stuff that I want to do, but I sort of set out and do it. And it's more like little things. Like, I want to go to this. I want to, but I've never like, oh, I want to write a book or I want to, you know, do things. I mean, from a pretty young age, like probably from the first time I went to London when I was about 8 or something like that, apparently after that, like from my ex-stepmother who was British and then lived in Australia with us, I used to like always talk about going back there to live. Like even from my first visit, I felt very in tune with it and I really wanted to go back there. And then I was meant to when I was like 18 and then something really weird happened and it all got changed. And then I did when I was like 20 and then I still go back to the UK fairly often. But that's like just like not really like something I wanted to be. It was just like something I wanted to do, but not really in an achievement way, just in a kind of yeah, but no, I never had like, oh, when I grow up, I want to be or whatever. Like from a very extremely young age, I probably said I wanted to be a vet just because I liked animals, but it was like very passing because I then, you know, learned more things and was like, yeah, I don't think I could do that, if you know what I mean. I've never had like full-time goals ever.
Wow. I think that's really interesting.
You're like, that's really pathetic and sad.
No, I think because for me, I've always been like an overachiever and I've always wanted to do everything. And so to kind of just like sit back and see what happens, like blows my mind in a good way.
It's not exactly, I mean, it's not exactly like, you know, you're making it sound like really chill. It's not exactly like that. It's more just that I'm pathetic and I don't care.
No, I don't believe that. Well, but. I always thought I would be some sort of scientist, which is really hilarious given what I do now, but I...
A mushroom scientist.
A mycologist.
Is that a thing?
I think so.
You know the word for a mushroom scientist?
Yeah, because I'm part of a mycological society, so...
Right, I'm looking it up. Anyway, go on. Sorry, okay. I'm listening.
So, when I was a pretty young kid, like... under 10 still, I wanted to be a heart surgeon. I don't really know why, but I don't know, maybe it had to do with the fact that like my grandpa had a heart attack and like he had long lived past when they said that he would because of all of his heart conditions and stuff. But I was very interested in being heart surgeon and until my dad kept calling it a sturgeon, which, if nobody knows, is a really,
it's
really
a fish, isn't
ugly,
it?
Yes, really, really ugly deep-sea fish. And I was like, no, Dad, I don't want to be a sturgeon. I want to be a surgeon. So,
and you got put off.
Maybe. But then I wanted to be a forensic scientist, and that almost happened. I was actually looking into colleges for it. And the college that I ended up going to had a very good forensic science program, and I didn't end up going for forensic science. I completely changed my mind, went from science to the arts, got an art history degree, and decided now that I would love to be a writer. So I always thought I was going to be some kind of scientist, and then I went in completely the opposite direction.
Like, my brother was always like, oh, yeah, like, when he was a little kid, he was like, I want to be an author, and alternately, he'd be like, I want to be a chef, and he's pretty much, like, he hasn't actively pursued that in terms of, like, he hasn't actively been like, oh, I've been writing my whole life, but he's sort of come around to the point where his main things now are, like academia, like doing really, like, wanky additions to his, you know, degree and stuff like that. And like working like as like a cook with catering and potentially starting his own like small catering thing. So he's sort of come around to the stuff that he always said since he was a small child. But yeah, I remember in high school like sort of not pretending to have goals exactly, but like, yeah, like kind of being, you know, for a few years being like, oh yeah, I want to do this just because. I don't know, it wasn't really real, though. It was, like, it wasn't something I actually wanted. It was just something, like, to say, pretty much, because everyone else was. But, yeah, I definitely remember being in, like, personal development classes and therapy and stuff like that, and people be like, so talk about your goals. And I'm like, I literally, like, I'm not trying to be, like, a stampy foot, not participate. I just don't know what you're talking about. Like, I can't actually do this realistically, if you know what I mean. Yeah, it's weird. And, I mean, I'm sure there were, like, fleeting moments, but, you know, you seem to have been, you know, really stuck in the same sort of path or the same ideas, and I just don't don't remember. I had things I liked. I just didn't have things I wanted. Like, all I wanted to was to read and, you know, ride horses. You know, I wanted to be a medieval knight, basically. I mean, not realistically, but, like, you know, that was kind of,
you
know.
Could have been, like, gone to, like, a company, like a Renaissance festival type thing and been, like, a jousting person.
Well, apparently I didn't want it that much. I mean, I didn't act. I wasn't delusional about being a medieval knight or anything. No, but I never had goals. Like, when I grew up, I want to be, like, I never had that.
Well, that's
anyway.
Depressing.
I don't find it depressing, but again, it's not as chill as you made out either. It's not just like, oh, you just go with the flow. It's just, I don't know, I just don't really care what happens to me, I don't think.
Well, on that note, no more Teen Wolf until next year.
I guess I'm like Derek Hales, so I'll have to get, like, you know, I'll have to get some goals to become a giant black wolf. How about that?
Well, I hope you don't almost have to die in order for that to happen.
Yeah. Like, even with Hyperbole, like, I literally fell into it by accident, and all of the stuff that has happened to me here has been sort of incidental opportunities. Like, I never, before I started, like, on the first podcast I was on with Hyperbole and then got asked to do a bit of new stuff to do with that, I'd, like, never considered, like, writing journalistic articles or, like, anything ever. Before, like, it wasn't like, oh my god, I want to join that, if you know what I mean. I got recommended for the podcast and I didn't expect to get it and got it, and then the writing stuff just, like, happened accidentally. Like, it wasn't on purpose at all. So yeah, it's weird, but oh well. Sorry, this is like, I feel like this is depressing and it's not meant to be.
It, oh well. And now we don't have Teen Wolf for, like, a really long time.
Oh, well, that's more depressing than my lack of goals.
But the good thing is we have some really special episodes coming up for you guys, which I will not spoil because they're pretty freaking awesome. And we've got a lot of open space for Hiatus, though. I haven't actually sat down and planned anything. So if you guys have any ideas, please let us know what you want us to discuss. We're going to go back to doing an episode every other week, and we'll try to get some interviews. We'll try to get some guest hosts and, you know, take suggestions for what kind of episodes you want to see.
Yeah, I mean, not going to lie to you guys, it probably won't be weekly. We'd aim for once every 2 weeks, I'd say, you know, depending on people's schedules, but given that it's not going to be a weekly show, you know, obviously Teen Wolf airing, you know, I think Karen and I are both on about four podcasts at the moment or something. So how many have you got at the moment?
Once Onceable comes back for Once Upon a Time, it will be four.
Yeah, Who Hype, Doctor Who, which has just started again. Glee Chat, where we're doing flashbacks to the first two seasons, so like rewatches. And then obviously this, and then Rewatchable as well for Avatar The Last Airbender. And yeah, so I'll be doing like two a weekend, basically, if we shift recording for this to the weekend. So yeah, I mean, it should be manageable, but it probably won't be weekly, I don't think. Unless Karen really wants it to be, but you know.
I think we're all pretty excited for Hiatus just to kind of chill for a little bit, because it has been pretty whirlwind since 3B started, actually, because even the hiatus between 3B and 4 was crazy for us. So, yeah, once every 2 weeks, and we'll still have some pretty fantastic things to bring out for you guys, but we're just going to kind of chill for a little bit, I think. Take a little bit of a break.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's about it until our first hiatus episode then. So I guess thank you to everyone for listening and hanging out with us and, you know, continuing to watch Teen Wolf through season 4. Do you have a number one desire for season 5, Karen?
I think, oh man, that's really hard. You know, I think I'm going to say finding out what Parrish is.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of a big deal. Yeah, I'd probably say that as well, honestly. I can't think of anything else. I really wanted the Scott and Derek bite thing to happen.
I did too, but I'm actually really excited for how this ended up happening.
I'm kind of fine with how it ended up, and, like, there seems to be something really zen about Derek, like, once he turned back into, like, the person after being the wolf, and, like, he seemed like a whole different person, so I'm curious to see, like, you know, what he's gonna be like after that, basically, so.
Yeah.
So I'd like to just see, you know, more of Derek being non-angry and, I guess, finding out what Parrish is as well.
Cool.
All right, so shall we say goodnight then, or good morning, or good afternoon, and yeah, we'll leave you now, you know, for the finale of Teen Wolf. So, bye-bye.
Bye.
When I was 16, my senses